a scratchy voice from the beginning of the last century that can still be heard this holiday season. We're going to consider the 100 years that have passed since a grand heroic moment of absolutely no military significance that occurred at the beginning of what was still not yet named the Great War, or even its later more familiar name, World War I.
Up to mighty London came an Irishman one day. As the streets are paved with gold, sure everyone was gay.
The boys who became the soldiers of the terrible trenches marched off to war 100 years ago when the summer sun shone and the flowers bloomed in August of 1914. By December of that year, the war that the great and small minds alike of Europe predicted would be over by Christmas had revealed itself to be a stalemate across the fields of Belgium and France. And so the boys in the trenches collectively made a decision on Christmas of 1914. They would, on their own, put down their arms. If the war would not be over by Christmas, these young men would pause the conflict for Christmas, German and French and English together.
We might feel sorry for the soldiers in the trenches in 1914. Many of them were up to waist high in water in freezing cold conditions. But quite a few of the letters say, I wouldn't have exchanged this Christmas for all the Christmases in the world. This was the best Christmas I've ever had.
That's writer Alan Cleaver talking about soldiers who honored a Christmas truce together, perhaps the last moment, the last breath of the gentle manners of 19th century Europe. These soldiers, the last trusting faces in uniform to understand that their commanders and leaders had committed the world to the unending mechanized slaughter that became the 20th century. But for two evenings and a day on December 24th and 25th, 1914, the Christmas truce was made and honored by thousands of soldiers. And we know that from letters the soldiers wrote from the front lines and sent back home. Alan Cleaver has collected hundreds of these letters for an online project he directs called Operation Plum Puddings. Cleaver lives in the small town of Whitehaven in Cumbria, England.
One of the factors that sort of led to the truce was that they were within shouting distance of each other. The trenches were very close in places, and the typical soldiers' humour, you know, the Germans would sort of shell the British lines, and then the British would sort of shout out, you know, left a bit or you missed. So I think the soldiers themselves were very surprised when Christmas arrived, and this sort of spontaneous truce broke out along the Western Front.
How's this reflected in the letters, as you've discovered?
Well, I think, first of all, one of the remarkable things that comes across in the letters is the fact that they realised that this was an astounding event. Christmas in the trenches, what a time. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men. On Christmas Eve at 4 p.m, we had orders that unless the enemy advanced, we were not to fire, and the same applied to Christmas Day. Whether the Germans had the same order or not, I don't know, but no shot was fired on either side. In Christmas Eve, we shouted compliments of the season to each other and passed pleasant remarks. We sang the Austrian anthem, and they replied with God Save the King. On Christmas Day, after service in the trenches, we went halfway and we shook hands and we had a fine chat with them. And that's probably a very typical letter in the sense of what happened and the excitement that comes across.
You know, the Great War is this sad metaphor about how Europe was unable to control the inhumanity of the war with these Napoleonic rules and things. And here this Christmas story tells an opposite tale.
What comes across in most of the letters is a sense of, well, here's what can be achieved. You know, if three warring nations can hold a truce like this at Christmas, then, you know, we could achieve peace. But I think certainly the British soldiers said that can only be done if the Germans retreat, if they, you know, go back out of France and out of Belgium and go back to their own country. So there was an understanding that, you know, this was a remarkable event, but it could only be extended into something else if the Germans backed down. But it was a very humane event, and the Pope had tried to organise a truce over Christmas, but the nations had said, no, we're not going to do that. And I think this showed that, irrespective of, you know, what might be done on high, the man on the front line can, if he wishes, control events to a certain degree.
Possibly it's also because in the letters you get this hint that the soldiers understood, as we all do now, that at the end of the 19th century, there were these huge forces of industrialization, of kind of globalization, that were suddenly coming into play, and the impulses of a few young men wanting to have Christmas were ultimately not going to matter and get overwhelmed, but we could just take a time out.
I think that there were a number of factors that sort of, that's certainly part of it. I think a number of factors led to that sort of truce. The proximity of the trenches, you know, people being able to talk to each other. But the fact that they shared a common culture, the fact that both of them celebrated Christmas, you know, was crucial to it. Because if they were fighting a nation that didn't celebrate Christmas, it would have been meaningless, of course. And what kicked it all off, really, was Christmas Eve, because the Germans celebrate Christmas Eve more than they celebrate Christmas Day. So they started singing these songs, and Silent Night is probably the carol most people associate with the truce. But we know from the letters and from war diaries that, in fact, the British didn't really know Silent Night as a carol in 1914. It was one that was not very well known in Britain. But they talk about, you know, Good King Wenceslas. There were music hall numbers, A Long Way to Tipperary. So it was it must have been very moving on Christmas Eve to hear these carols coming over No Man's Land.
And to listen back one century to those voices still resonating, those carols still audible, even today.
Well, I think when you read the letters, they could have been written yesterday. You know, they are talking our language. They're talking with great excitement, and they're talking firsthand. You know, they're saying that this is what's taking place at this very moment. And censorship appears to have been, you know, in its infancy then. And there's a lot of items that are mentioned in the letters, and you think, goodness, you know, how did that get past the censor? Fortunately, it did, and it's recorded it. I'm right in saying that it was censored for a while when the truce took place. At first, the British were not allowed to talk about it at all, and it was only because American newspapers were going to publish it, who were not subject to our rules, of course, that the British realised, well, we'd better let the cat out of the bag and, let this story get out. So it's only thanks to the American press that the British eventually got to hear about this.
Well, it's good to know that we did something right. Alan Cleaver, thanks so much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Alan Cleaver is coordinator of Operation Plum Puddings, about the truce 100 years ago, the beginning of the Great War in 1914.